Welcome to the UFO Files Show with your host, Jerry Piffin.
On the line now, we have Richard and Gene Seifert. Gene was a former Oklahoma State UFON, that's a Mutual UFO Network director, for about 20 years. Richard was Ohio State director for about 6 years and was a co-director there in Oklahoma with Gene for about 9 years. Right now, Gene is the assistant state director for Arkansas, an assistant to the Central Regional Director of Dr. Jack Kasher, I think is his name. He's up at the University of Nebraska. And Gene is doing some coordination and networking with the lower 11 central states. And before MUFON, she did investigations for the National Investigating Committee of an organization you probably heard of, Aerial Phenomena. That's NICAP for most. And Richard is a member of the Western Writers of America and the Ozark Writers Conference, formerly trained in creative writing and historiography. He has previously published 2 nonfiction books, The Administrative History of the Flathead Indian Reservation to 1890, and Native Encounters. He also has 5 novels. One of those novels is out. It's on a website. We'll talk to him about that in a little bit. Welcome to the show, Gene and Richard, both. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
We're just fine, thank you.
Good, and of course you're on the line from Arkansas, northwestern Arkansas.
Yes.
And we appreciate you taking time to talk to us tonight. We had you on one time before, just briefly, and I think we basically just talked to Gene at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And that was over a friend of yours that had a UFO sighting on Grand Lake here in Oklahoma, about 100 miles north of Muskogee.
Correct.
Up at Grove.
By 27th of April.
And that was by sailboat bridge, if I remember.
Yes, about 3 miles from sailboat bridge, but he could see it from where he was on top of the hill.
So, I mean, that's pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm. It was.
And we might bring some people up to speed on that.
Well, what happened is he called me on his cell phone, and he called me on my cell phone. I was here at home, just getting into bed, and it was about a quarter to 11, if I remember correctly. And he said, Gene, I've been watching this UFO for a couple of hours down here below me on the water's edge. And he was telling me what it had been doing, and he said that it sort of seemed like it opened up on top, and it was a circular thing, and a couple of balls of light of some sort came out of the top of it and came down and started searching in a zigzag pattern, much like a military search pattern would be, along the edge of this cove. And it's about a 1,000-foot zigzag. And the big UFO stayed with him for quite a while. And then it moved off into over the woods about perhaps 400 feet away and just stayed there and hovered. And then these little lights just kept doing this. And he was telling me this. And he said that, I was hoping that it would sit down and, you know, somebody get out of it and I could see what they were or whatever. And about that time he said, uh-oh, he says, it's going over to the little balls. I think it's going to pick them up. And he was telling me as this went along, you know, and he said, he said, oh, no, it's just taking off. He said, the little balls went up inside of it from the bottom. And he said, it's leaving. It's not going to sit down, it's leaving. It's going away. He was really disappointed. And he said, it's going straight up now, straight up. And by this time, my husband and I had got to the front porch. We said, well, where should we look? It was a perfectly clear night. I said, where could we look? Maybe we could see something. And he said, look up to the left of the Big Dipper, which was very obvious in the sky. Even with our trees around, we could see it right up there. And first we didn't see a thing. 4 or 5 seconds later, there was a big flash up there. It was quite large, larger than any star, but not huge, you know. But, I mean, it was larger than any star. It was very brilliant, like a strobe light, but it was just about a one-second blurb. And then there was nothing for about 5 or 6 seconds. I said, I saw something. What is it? You know? And at the same time, this guy, a friend of mine, was exclaiming, there it is, you know. And
so both of you could see it at the same time.
And it blinked about 5 times. It few seconds interval, and each time it seemed to be further away, going, I guess it was going north. It's difficult to say. But,
away from both of you?
Yes, away north and up.
Uh-huh.
And just at about a 20, maybe a 10 or 15 degree angle into the sky. And each time it flashed, it was further away and smaller, and obviously smaller. And after about five or six flashes, it was just gone.
Richard, how far are you from Sailboat Bridge? About 60 miles, 70 miles by the way the crow flies? Or?
Yeah, I looked on the map, and that's about it, 60 to 80 miles on a straight line.
So you guys could see at the same time he could, so it was obviously pretty high in the sky.
Yeah, it had to be fairly high.
The thing that impressed me was, here's a guy telling me the story, and then the thing takes off. And for him to have timed that just right, after talking to me for 10 minutes, you know, that it got up to that particular area and bleaked a few times as it was leaving, it's really just... beyond a coincidence, you know. And so I felt like, to me, it was a very authentic thing. It's probably the most authentic thing I have seen. I have seen one other light-in-the-sky type sighting that I felt was a UFO, but I didn't have the feeling that I had about this one, because this one was being corroborated by someone at a distance. Like
yeah, and the interesting thing is that we were talking about these balls of light that came out of it over there at Grand Lake. Would you call those orbs, or what? What were they? Do you think? I mean, you've been in UFO business for a long time. Is that a fairly common thing to be reported?
Yes, it's pretty common.
Mm-hmm.
I know that they have a lot of photographs of these orbs, and they've had some that were, and I've seen the videos of the orbs inside the circles over in England, this sort of thing, going around in the circle. And so we don't know what they are. There's a lot of speculation, but some sort of a probe.
Yeah, how long have you guys been in Arkansas now?
3 years.
And
just retired and moved here. The beautiful mountains and this beautiful community, and we really enjoy it. We miss Oklahoma, but we enjoy the mountains and the solitude.
Richard, do you write westerns? Is that right?
Yes, I do. Contemporary westerns, though not in the old days. I have a trilogy that's completed, and my first book just came out called Medicine Grizzly, and it takes place in the 1980s up in Glacier National Park. I worked up there 6 seasons as a ranger, and so I have a pretty good background for it.
So now, this first book is out, and are you selling it on your website or what?
Yeah, on the website, or people can purchase it from First Books and
First Books Library.
First Books Library in Bloomington, Indiana, and
just firstbooks.com.
Yeah, firstbooks.com.
With a 1ST, not an FIRST.
Okay, yeah. It's the numeral 1 and then ST,
books.com.
Okay.
Or they can get it off of our website, which is Seifried, S-E-I, S as in Sam, E-I, F as in Frank, R-I-E-D.
Okay,
I'm sorry, it's Richard Seifried. All one word, RichardSeifried.com.
Yeah, you don't want to leave him out.
I don't think that would work.
R-I-C-H-A-R-D-S...
R-I-C-H-A-R-D-S-E-I...
F-R-I-E-D.
F-R-I-E-D. .com.
If you guys get mixed up, I can tell you.
The reason I ask about the Westerns right off the top is, have you ever thought about writing science fiction since you're a UFO?
Yeah, I have. I've written a young adult novel, called Voice in the Wilderness, based on a true incident that happened out in Idaho, having to do with a little girl who was being called up into the mountains in the evenings because some man wanted to talk to her. And it was a very strange thing. The mother would not really tell me what was going on. And so I developed a UFO novel out of it, primarily because that was the same mountain where I first realized I was being abducted.
Yeah, no, and I want to get into that here after we take a break and find out about this abduction story. And Gene, one of the things I want to do with you is find out, you know, you've been got all these credentials. I want to hear some of these stories of really sightings and encounters that really jump out at you over the years.
Have you just
thought? Yeah, we got lots of things to cover here. We still got 2 or 3 minutes before the break. In fact, we might as well start right now. What's the most interesting sighting that you ever received about the state of Oklahoma, since I'm broadcasting in Oklahoma and you guys used to live here?
Wow, there's so many.
Or just one of them. It doesn't have to be most. I guess probably that's the wrong answer.
Do you want a real short one?
Well, it's got to go in 2 or 3 minutes, but that's
okay,
fine.
Okay, we had a sighting up in that we investigated in Claremore, Oklahoma, and it really wasn't exactly, it was like 3 years after the sighting that the woman found an old roll of film in a drawer and didn't know what was on it. Unexposed. I mean,
underdeveloped. They had not taken it to develop.
That's right. And she took it to be developed, and it was, sure enough, it was this UFO that they had seen one night when the little boys were out camping in the backyard, came in and got her, and they'd seen this big red light in from their tent, and they looked outside, and there was this UFO hovering, and so she took pictures of it. That's the best pictures I ever got of a UFO. They're pretty good. And in one corner of one of the negatives, very, very tiny, I saw some little white dots, and I said, oh, what are those things? There was nothing else on the negative. There was no UFO in that particular picture. And so I had it blown up, and they looked like little bubbles. And I'm wondering if they could be, it looked like in one frame, it looks like either there's four of them or three, or they moved into four different positions in that time. And we had this thoroughly investigated by our photo analyst for MUFON at the time, and he could not find anything that it could be anything else other than probably a UFO. But these little, we never could figure out quite what these little bubbly-looking things were, and I wondered if they might have been probes of some sort, because she talked about the light, the ball of lights that came out of the thing and flew around them in the neighborhood. And then went back.
They're terrific pictures. They're really good.
Yeah. They sound like it. What did the main object look like?
It looked sort of like, it looked like a
disc.
A disc.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly longer at one end than the other, like it had a front end and a rear end. The front end had a point on it with a little protrusion on the point. And it has just small canopy or something on the top. And, of course, it's not like your bright daytime beautiful photograph. It's in the night, and there's this red light that radiates around the area so that the pictures actually look kind of pinkish, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And the little boys were talking about the red light, and that's how they got Mama's attention.
And this actually happened in the city of Claremore, or out of it?
Just outside the city. Mm-hmm. In a just a rural neighborhood. Really fine folks, really. You know, I mean, it was obviously not something that they staged to get attention or something.
One of the things that, and both of you are welcome to answer this, one of the things I've often wondered about, you know, the average guy on the street, you talk about UFO sightings, he thinks of 1952, 1947. Of course, we know there's been a lot of them, a lot more current than that. The one thing I wonder, have they been fairly consistent, you think? Or of course, there have been lulls and little flaps, you know, of certain areas. But there seems to me that the last 50 or 60 years has been a pretty constant flow of UFO sightings. I mean, like we do one every... every week we do a UFO sightings report, and we never lack for material.
Well, right. What do you think about that, Richard?
Well, I think probably they've always been around, maybe not as prevalent as now, but now when I wrote that Native Encounters, that's about UFO sightings in Oklahoma, and I started out in the 1880s. The Indians would observe these red balls of fire that would come whizzing down and rushing along their pasture and so on. And the thing is, there weren't many people living in the area then, so there could have been as many. many UFOs than is now.
Yeah, there just wouldn't be any reports. I guess that it seems to me that there seems to be more UFO sightings in more populated areas now than there used to be. But maybe it's just the reporting's a little better, you know, thanks to the web, and you can email people now and things like that.
Yeah, I think so. People are becoming used to seeing things, and they don't get quite as excited as they did, you know, 30 years ago.
We're going to take a break, get back with you.
Okay.
And I want to get into your abduction, and Gene, I want to get into some other sightings and some of your ideas about this, because I know that you guys have been fascinated with this subject for many years now. And we'll open up the phone lines at that time, too.
Have you ever thought about becoming a licensed private investigator? No need to pay hundreds of dollars in researching fees, because Hall of Fame member of the National Association of Investigative Specialists, Joe Culligan, has the answer for you. He's written the most comprehensive and complete reference manual available, giving you the information you need about the licensing requirements in all 50 states and elsewhere, so that you too can become a highly paid licensed private investigator. This manual is all beef and no bull, so you can become a private investigator part-time or full-time quickly by learning the requirements in all 50 states and more. Yes, you too can become a PI. Order Joe Culligan's Requirements to Become a PI book or video now. They make great gifts, too. Only $19.95 plus postage, shipped anywhere. To pay by check or credit card by phone, call 1-800-921-9898. 1-800-921-9898.
Our guest on the line from Northwestern Arkansas, Gene and Richard Seifert. Yeah, very interesting, as you know already, if you've been listening to the show. Gene was a former Oklahoma State UFO Mutual UFO Network director for about 20 years here in Oklahoma. Richard was Ohio State director for about 6 years. They've been together for some time. They complement each other very well. And welcome back to the show, both of you.
Thank you.
Now, I have an email here. Somebody wanted to ask Richard, you mentioned Native encounters.
Yeah.
And they say, I'm very interested in that. I have heard many tales from Native Americans about things that could have easily been space aliens. Could you ask Richard to maybe expound upon some of that a little bit?
Yeah. Well, in my book, there's just the introductory part was about the Indians. And I know quite a few Indians in different areas, and they don't have any problem with the UFO phenomenon at all. It's just part of the natural world with them. Specifically, I know a lot about the Blackfeet up in Montana, and they have UFO encounters, and they don't get excited about it. They don't call the sheriff. They just go right on with their lives. That's just part of the way things are, as far as they're concerned.
Very, very, very interesting. In fact, I had a guest one time call me up and tell me that the Cherokees came from the Pleiades.
Well, that must be a pretty busy place up there.
Yeah, right. so that isn't unusual. Gene, when you were move on director here in Oklahoma, we have a lot of Native American population, of course. I have a guy by the name of Daryl Sims who we call occasionally, call himself the alien hunter, and he insists that 45% of all of the abductions that he hears, they have Native American heritage. Have you ever thought about that? Does there seem to be any correlation? Is there a lot of Native American sightings?
I don't recall very much of that, of the Native American sightings. Perhaps the same reason Richard just mentioned, because they take this as a natural thing, and they don't get excited when they see it. But if you're talking about Oklahoma, that's a very likely possibility, because so many people do have Indian blood in Oklahoma, and so that could very well be true. I never I never went by race.
I understand that. I'm just kind of curious because the emailer brought the subject up. Mm-hmm.
Well, it seems like ethnic groups really aren't the quickest to respond to a UFO sighting because they're afraid of ridicule.
Mm-hmm.
And so you don't get many reports from them.
Let's get into the syncount story.
Okay.
What happened exactly, Richard?
Okay, this was back in 1977, actually, July 16th, I believe. And I was working for the United States Forest Service in timber thinning out in Idaho, up on the Continental Divide. And just to make a long story really short, I had to hike way up this mountain and onto a lookout. I wanted to visit the lookout up there, who had seen UFOs, by the way. And on the way up, I heard electronic sounds, and there was no one around, miles. I heard a real strange animal-like roar. It reminded me of Gargantua, that huge gorilla that I saw once in the Ringling Brothers Farm and Bailey Circus.
So this was a big noise, and it was from an animal, and you recognized probably from a gorilla's.
Yeah, well, I didn't see anything, but then there were crashing sounds of, trees being smashed. It was right there in front of me, but I couldn't see it.
And we talked about that earlier when you were around the forest and things like that.
So anyway, coming down, I'm skipping a lot of stuff, but coming down the mountain, I was walking along on that same trail about where I'd heard that animal, and I took one step, I was there, and when I put my right foot forward, I was 3 miles away in an area we called the Silverleaf.
So you took one giant step for mankind, but wasn't on the moon.
That's right.
Three miles, and you don't know how much missing time was involved or anything, or do you?
I don't know how much because you don't think of things like that the first time it happens. And all I know is, in retrospect, it was later in the day, because I had a heck of a time getting back. I got dark on me. And I just got angry with myself. Well, how in the world could I have done that? There was only one trail, and I couldn't realize how I got over to that other place where we had been logging. So that gave me the idea. And then from that point on, people started coming to me and telling me about their UFO sightings. And, it wasn't coincidental at all.
Now, what do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, before then, people never told me about their UFO sightings, and then after that day, it seemed like people were...
Well, was this because you had mentioned that you had this UFO sighting, or this missing time, or you took one step that lasted 3 miles, or did they just come up out of the blue and start talking to you?
They just come up out of the blue. I didn't tell anybody because I just told the guys at the bunkhouse I wanted them to go back up with me to see what happened, and they wouldn't do it.
Wouldn't do it at all.
Huh? Half of them were afraid, and the two Indian boys were afraid. They said, well, we're not going up. And so I didn't go up until the following year. Some young lady decided to go up with me. And I had been told, I found out years later, that I wasn't supposed to come back. I don't know if I told you this before or not. But coming down the mountain then, I didn't show her where all this had happened like I said I would. And she was angry with me. And I was driving a little Toyota, and I was leaning forward because it was a really treacherous mountain road looking through the windshield. And suddenly out from the side of the hill came this huge rock. It was flat like a piece of flagstone. And it came sailing down, and I hit the brakes, and the girl hit her head into the windshield, and the rock fell right in front of my front bumper. If I hadn't seen it, it would have come in on it.
And you think this was on purpose?
Oh, absolutely. And I've seen rocks fall. This one didn't bounce. This one sailed up in the air like somebody threw a shot put. And I said to her, did you see that? She says, yeah. And I started the car again, and we took off. We never talked about it, never said anything about it again. So that was in 78. And finally in 1980, I couldn't stand it anymore. I went downtown in Dayton, Ohio, and to a doctor of psychology. He ran me through a battery of psychological tests, found out that I was reasonably sane, and so he put me under regressive hypnosis, and this story came out that I'd been inducted. it was quite remarkable. He had never heard of anything like that. The only one I had heard of was Betty and Barney Hill.
Sure.
He taped it, and he gave me copies of the tape, and I have it secured. And whenever we work with people who are abducted, sometimes they'll say some things that haven't been released to the public that is in my document, you mm-hmm. know, some of the experiences I had. But what has happened since then, when I came to Oklahoma to live, I underwent a series of regressive sessions. And as far as I know now, I have been abducted 6 times in my life. So I'm sure that it happened before the first one. The first one I know about, I was 19. And
is this the one on the mountain, or was this before that?
Oh, no, that was before that. I was 50 when that happened to me on the mountain.
Okay.
And I had 3 scoop marks in my legs, and the one was very evident. I got that in 1977. The other two were real old, and they're kind of hard to see.
So you think those are implants?
No, they took tissue out of my body with some kind of an instrument. A lot of people have the very same thing, an awful lot of abductees do. And I was undergoing a physical with my doctor because I have arthritis, and I said, well, I want to show you this thing on my shin. And I showed him this hole on my shin, and he looked at it, and he said, well, they took some of the bone tissue, too. So you see, people know about this stuff, but they just don't talk about it.
Did you ask the doctor what he meant by that? Or
no, I didn't. I knew he didn't want to talk about it. Uh-huh. He would look me in the eye.
Now, where was this doctor?
He was in Norman, Oklahoma.
Okay.
Very good professional doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do you remember what the people looked like
They were the traditional, what they call now, the grays. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
They seem to be rather light complected, big round eyes, no hair, little bump on each side. It was probably an ear. I couldn't see it very well.
Mm-hmm.
And 2 little holes for nostrils and a little slit for a mouth, which moved a little bit, you know, when they talked or something.
Now, the interesting thing about all of these stories of these is that there's lots of things that are similar, but uh-huh. this gorilla-like noise you heard, I haven't heard that before.
Well, this is the only case I know of, and that was a really repressed aspect of
life. Well, it sounds just as scary as hell just listening to it now. I mean, I don't blame you for
repressing. Well, see, I didn't think I was scared. That's the interesting thing. So when the hypnotherapist finally got me to that point, she said, Richard, you're not telling everything. You promised me you were going to tell everything. Now let's go back and do it again. And about the third time around, all of a sudden, here is this big, hairy creature looking up at me. And it roared, you know. And I was scared to death.
Well, sure.
And it would pick up, there were some fallen trees that were pretty big around, about a foot and a half thick, you know. He would pick up parts of the trunks and slam them on the ground, trying to fight me.
Mm-hmm.
And then he finally went downhill and did it one more time. Well, before I underwent hypnosis, I heard the roar and I heard these slamming sounds. I didn't think I was frightened. And then when he threw the last trunk of the tree down, he was further down slope. And I thought, uh-huh, whatever it is afraid of me and it's retreating. And I thought that was pretty neat. So I went out on the meadow and sat under the only tree there and ate my lunch, hoping it would come out so I could see the darn thing. Because I still didn't know what I was dealing with if all that was stress. That was pretty exciting.
Right. Well, of course it was. And was it some kind of a Bigfoot creature? Or?
Yes, it was. And I saw a Bigfoot once in Crater Lake National Park. They're seen quite often. That's suppressed too. I was the 5th ranger in Crater Lake to see a Bigfoot, and I saw him at night. And I've smelled them. I've seen their footprints.
Yes, sir. So, was there any smell with this gorilla-like creature that was slamming the trees and everything around you that due to the abduction? Is it similar to the or do you know?
The one I saw at Crater Lake was slimmer. It was really tall, but it was slimmer. The one I saw when I was abducted that time was a lot stockier, a lot more powerfully built.
He talks about the smell.
Oh, the smell? There was no odor that I could detect on the mountain.
That's interesting. And this big creature, was he about 8 feet tall or something?
I couldn't tell because the one I was looking downhill at that was doing all that slamming, he was downhill, and all I could tell was he was really big, you know. He was taller than I. And the one at Crater Lake I saw, I was in a truck, and he crossed the road right in front of me, just a couple yards in front of me, and he was taller than the truck. But I couldn't tell because, you know, I was sitting down. I would guess he was about 8 feet tall, that one. The one up on the mountain, I have no idea how tall he was.
And were you abducted by this creature, or was it the little grays?
No. That's a questionable thing, and I think they're used as a sort of a shield to keep people away from UFO activity, because right where he had appeared when I came back, I encountered these little guys, and I'm sure there's a connection between that Bigfoot and those guys.
Mm-hmm.
They were mining. They were digging in the ground when I first saw them.
I tell you what, I'm going to have both of you back some other time. Time's got us, and we thanks very much, and we'll follow this up some more. I the time's really got me here. I'm on a fast computer break, and you know how that works.
Okay.
I got to get out of here. Thank you a lot, both of you. Bye-bye. Enjoy.
If you'd like to write to Jerry Pippin, just address your letter to The Jerry Pippin Talk Show, P.O. Box 800, OK, Oklahoma. Jerry's the only talk show host that not only has an 800 telephone number, but he also has an 800 post office box. That's Jerry Pippin, P.O. Box 800, OK, 74446.